Welcome into Wildcat Insider. John Kurtz joined by the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, Brennan Menson for Mitch Fortner as well. Mitch is at Bramblage Coliseum, where tonight the K-State women can punch their ticket to the Sweet 16 with a win over Stanford in a 2-7 matchup of the NCAA tournament. We're only with you for an hour because of that, so we're here until 5 o'clock, and we will pass the baton off to pregame coverage of the K-State women at that point in time. So between now and then, we have a ton to cover. Obviously, K-State's season is over as they fall at the hands of Cincinnati 75-61. We'll talk about that. Some crazy coaching news from the Big 12 as well, involving a former character here from K-State that we'll get to in the open also. 537-1350, 866-776-1350 to call the show, or you can tweet us at the game KMAN. Ton has happened since we last talked to you. We were talking last Monday about the play-in game against Wake Forest. K-State goes out and against a team that doesn't really defend anybody, scores a ton of points. It was a totally different kind of game against Cincinnati that they lose 75-61. And I guess the prevailing thought to me after watching that game was just that it was a 6 seed against an 11 seed. Maybe they should have been more like a 5 seed, Cincinnati, that is. It just seemed like K-State ran into a better team, and that's going to happen in the NCAA tournament.
It is, and it happens a lot, and I think it happened to K-State. I don't know. I've always felt like I'm kind of a guy of percentages. If those two teams played 10 times, as an example, what would you say? How many times would K-State win out of those 10?
Maybe two or three.
Yeah, I think maybe that's right. It could be four. I don't know that it would be any more than that, though, just based on what I saw. Cincinnati was bigger. They were stronger. They were deeper. Now, yes, K-State caught them on a night where they shot exceptionally well. Watching them last night against UCLA, I don't know how you thought about it. Was that last night?
I think it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've all kind of run together in the last
days. A lot of basketball the last few days.
But what struck me is being there courtside at that facility, and just when Cincinnati came out to warm up, just how much bigger all the way across the board they were. And yet seeing UCLA basically be about the same with them.
Right.
I guess the moral of the story is this. I think Cincinnati outplayed and outshot Kansas State. I think on most days they probably are a better team. And I think after that experience, I think K-State probably, frankly, needs to get bigger and probably a little bit more deeper too. It's just you see those kind of teams and it kind of makes you realize, you know, K-State needs a little more depth and clearly more size.
I'm with you on that, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think it was a good example and some good evidence of – I mean, yeah, you can get matchups and make a run in the postseason tournament, but
of course, in general,
I think you look at what K-State did this year and you do say, yes, exceeded expectations. You know, they were picked ninth in the Big 12. I guess it depends on who you ask if they exceeded expectations, but by some measure they did. And they made the NCAA tournament, which most people had as the bar, and even if you don't count the play-in game, they won that and got their way into the actual field. But the difference between this team and a team that has a chance to go to the second weekend, there's still a pretty sizable gap there. K-State could jump up and beat the Baylors of the world every now and then, but you know, to put yourself as one of those teams that everybody is chasing and trying to get every now and then, there is still ways to go.
Right. Again, we're talking percentages. I do think on a given night, K-State could beat Cincinnati. But I don't think it's going to be a night in what we saw in that, A, they shot so well, making whatever it was, eight of their first eight before they missed a shot.
Well, then they missed a shot and offensive board it and score.
Yeah. So. And then on top of that, K-State not getting the optimum DJ Johnson. I'm not sure, honestly, what that was, but I saw DJ at the shoot-around. He limped a little bit, but he always does. I didn't think too much of it. And then you get into the game broadcast and you're sitting there at courtside and all of a sudden it just kind of hits you like somebody socks you in the nose. It's like, this isn't right. You know, he's just not there, not the same guy. And that was troubling.
He just seemed to be a total non-factor. He told Bruce Weber that he just didn't have it, I think was the direct quote from him.
Yeah.
That was bizarre. It was a weird thing because – I guess it's one thing to have it happen, and it's another if it was injury-related. I mean, we know how much the guys had to battle through injuries throughout the year, but it's your last game. I mean, could have been, obviously, and was when you go into it. That, to me, was the bizarre part of everything. I mean, I'm never going to question DJ Johnson's toughness, but just to have that happen in your potentially last game of your career is crazy.
Well said. I am in no way, shape, or form questioning his toughness or his want to. That's not the point. My point is just simply stating I'm not sure what the deal was, but that's not the DJ Johnson that we had seen in the handful of games over the 2 weeks prior to that one. That was obvious.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. You don't have much from DJ Johnson. Wesley Awundu was great when he was in there, but he got in serious, serious foul trouble in the first half. And, you know, I'm never going to – I actually said on Twitter at the time that it happened, I love the move to get him back in the game after he picks up his second foul. I think you had to once you fall behind by double digits, which they did. It was 11:44 when he got his second foul. He came back in at 7:39, and K-State was down 27-14. I think you have to put him in at that point, but unfortunately he picks up his third foul. Cincinnati smartly went right after him.
And I will add this and probably regret it. That call on his third foul was the worst thing I've seen in a while.
Well, I certainly didn't like it, yeah.
That was bad. And I'll be honest in this one, too, probably regret it. I didn't think that for an NCAA tournament game was very well officiated in any way, shape, or form. That's not whining and winning and losing from my perspective. I'm just saying that wasn't a good call. And for that level of game, I was hoping and expecting better. Just being honest. Again, Cincinnati was the better team. They played better. They made shots. We talked about DJ. K-State didn't shoot it very well. Didn't seem to have the same energy, especially when West picked up the third. So there were there were things stacked against them, no question about it.
It serves to me as a good point to jump off from and say, look how much better Wesley Awundu was at the end of the year, because that became a huge deal that you couldn't have him nearly as much in the first half and fell behind by 11 going into the second half. I mean, Wes was on a tear there down the last month of the season.
I even remember saying to Stan during a break, when was the last game that we played off the top of your head where Wes had been in any kind of foul trouble? I couldn't think of one. I don't know if he ever came up with one or not. It just was such a strange thing, and I just thought the foul was a cheap thing. There was no advantage gained in any way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought it was a poor call under the circumstances. Let the guys play.
Under the circumstances especially, NCAA tournament game and just the significance of the player and the foul. And I know a lot of people may have the stance, just make everything across the board, but we know that things change based on circumstance and situation. Yeah, I did not like it at all for Wesley Awundu there. But
so a frustrating way to end, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I my thing is with I don't particularly like those who believe that the play-in game doesn't count. That's baloney. It does count. That's why we played it. If you want to take it from 64 forward, okay. But K-State was in the play-in game. And I will say, experiencing that for the first time, it is quite uniquely different. It really is. From Selection Sunday to the morning after that game when we're on a 4.5-hour flight to Sacramento, that was a unique experience, I'll say that.
Well, winning in March is fun. I kept talking about that, and I think just seeing the guys get to experience that. I mean, it is good that they got two games worth of NCAA tournament experience, even though they didn't advance past the round of 64. I don't think there's much other than good that can come from that for this team. But it does feel like somewhat of an appropriate ending based on, you know, the season. And we're not going to have as much time probably as I would like to put a bow really on the season today. Maybe we can do that next week as well on Wildcat Insider. But this team was pretty up and down. At the end of the day, they were a bubble team that was good enough to make it in, even win a playing game. And I think they did absolutely deserve to be in the field of 64. But as we said, I mean, they're going to have a little bit of ways to go. Point guard, maybe a big man, some depth, if they are going to ascend beyond where they're at right now.
Oh, sure. I think all of us who follow the team, whether you're doing what you and I are doing or whether you're just, you know, a fan, whether you're a fanatical fan or a casual fan, I think everybody sees that what K-State loses in DJ Johnson and Wesley Awundu is significant, okay? We're talking about guys that really played at a pretty uniquely high level. I mean, Wes has been third team All-Big 12 the last 2 years. One of the better defenders in our league, no doubt. I don't think most people would deny that. You look at DJ, who ended up being a pretty decent player when his from the time his career started to when it ended, and all things in between with the injury. This was a guy that led the league, as an example, in field goal percentage, and by a pretty decent margin. Not a big scorer, but, you know, 11 points a game, you know. When he was getting 11, 12 points a game and 7 or 8 rebounds, think about, you know, how tough K-State was as an out. So those are pretty big losses. Having said that, you've got to develop some young guys pretty quickly here and then lean on those guys that have been through this now for a couple of years, and that is the obvious three who will be juniors next year and probably Xavier Sneed. Xavier's going to have to take a major step forward next year, no doubt about that.
That's part of why it's almost a double-edged sword the way that Wesley Wonder was playing at the end of the year. Because, you know,
true.
We know the value of DJ Johnson, certainly, and just being the big guy, and this
right.
team has some question marks down low. But the other thing is, I just didn't anticipate Wesley. You know, midway through the season, I was thinking, I mean, Wesley Wonder's going to be a loss. He's a guy that's been around for a while, but now it seems like a more daunting loss the way he was playing down the stretch. I mean, he was the guy that I think if you had to say who played the best basketball in K-State's little spurt there at the end of the year where they go on the run the end of the year, Big 12 tournament, it was Wesley Owundu.
No doubt.
And now he is gone.
Yeah. And it is a significant loss. I pointed this out on one of the radio shows for Coach Weber late in the year of how many categories Wesley Owundu was in the league and in league-only games in the top 15. And it was like 7 and 8 categories. To give you an example, I think in the conference only, there was only maybe 10 categories, and he was in the top 15 in 8 of them. You know, and the couple that he wasn't in, he was right there on the edge. So the point is it's a versatile guy who can defend. He scored pretty well. His shot the last couple weeks he was real good. He just was real good. And so you'll certainly miss that. And I almost equate it to a guy like Jacob Pullen, but in a different way, in that everybody, when they think of Jacob Pullen now, they think about him as a senior and being an All-American. They don't think about what he really was as a freshman or sophomore. And that growth process through that for Wes was pretty good too. Not necessarily All-American level, but pretty good. So what you have to hope for is, and I think there is a chance that this could happen, guys like, I think we all saw glimpses of what Xavier Sneed could be, right? And if he takes the role that I think he is capable of in becoming more front and center as a player, more front and center as one of the leaders of the team, I think you could make the case that he'll make a pretty significant jump in his sophomore season. Let's hope. And maybe more so than most because of his skill set.
Well, he's got the most similar to Wesley Owundu as far as
no
skill
doubt.
Set is concerned on the team of guys that are going to be back next season. We'll talk more about the future of the team at 4:40. Again, we only have an hour today because of women's pregame. They play at 5:30. And speaking of that, we'll talk about it when we come back. Plus, I know we didn't get to the Brad Underwood news. We'll address that when we come back. He makes a shocking move to go to Illinois after 1 year at Oklahoma State. This is Wildcat Insider.